Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Magnus Thiebald. I'm your host for this hour, and we've got a bunch of stuff lined up for you. In just a few moments, we have a report on an effort to restore, or at least get it happening in a stronger way, local journalism here in Burnaby, with the recent closure of several local community papers. There's a bit of a shortage, and Danny's going to be our local journalism initiative reporter. Danny Nezvadarani is going to be reporting on that. And of course, that's something here at CJSF we're stepping in to fill in as much as we can. With support from the Local Journalism Initiative, we have a full-time reporter and another person committing half their work week to local reporting. And you've been hearing a lot of that coming right here on shows like this one here on CJSF, and we hope to expand on that. We also have a report from Smithers, BC. They opened a new expanded their skateboard park and had a big celebration to support that. And then perhaps the most famous skateboarder in the world, Tony Hawk, decided to show up. And that's pretty cool in a small town like Smithers in a remote part of the province. It's a neat report because, as you might expect, the community, particularly the skate community in Smithers, was thrilled by this. And, you know, Tony Hawk just decided he wanted to come and help the town celebrate their new skate park. So we'll have a report from that in a little bit as well. We have Gardening with Embark coming up, and we're going to be talking about getting in your first harvest and how to make the most of that to both save yourself work and do it efficiently, but also to make sure that you're... that your produce is doing, that you're going to get it in and keep it in good shape. So we have Pablo Vimas joining us at about 25 to 11 to talk about that. Some good music and a bunch of other stuff. Over this weekend, there have been large protests in Los Angeles. If you've been following the news... I would say following the news, but it hasn't always been really well reported. As you probably know, though, the Trump administration has since taking office in January, has been doing a big crackdown on immigration and, you know, illegal aliens. And over the course of these last months, there's been a great deal of concern. Maybe concern isn't even a strong enough word. Outrage, worry about the practices and methods that the administration and the ICE, or Immigrations and Custom Enforcement, which is basically the immigration police force, have been using with a lot of tactics that basically involve just grabbing people off the streets, showing up at a workplace and arresting practically everyone, and then figuring out who's got papers and who doesn't afterwards. Of course, you've probably heard about the people who were swept up and then sent to basically a gulag prison in El Salvador. The most famous case of that is Abrego Garcia, who is someone who had... They didn't have what we call here in Canada, you know, permanent residency status, but they had a legal status allowing them to continue through a process court-ordered for that. And he was seized and renditioned to this prison in El Salvador. And that's caused a great deal of controversy just because it seemed to be in violation, you know. And then there were court orders saying, you know, the administration hadn't done things properly and needed to bring him back, which were stymied. Apparently now he's back in the United States facing some criminal charges. And from what I've read, a lot of people think those are kind of trumped up. I can't really go, I don't have the expertise to go into that in detail. But this whole process has been one in which the administration is basically simply not bothering to use due process when rounding people up. They're just rounding people up and detaining them and then sending them out of the country without any sort of due process. And due process doesn't mean like a full trial, as you might think of as in a criminal trial. But it does mean, you know, using a process that definitively defines the person's legal status with regard to their immigration and stuff, not just some police officer, ICE officers, sort of belief that, well, we didn't have, you know, that they're an illegal and they deserve to go and that's all the process that's needed. So this has been a great deal of concern because people see it as just as the first step in a larger effort towards undermining due process in the United States and a general culture of just not really following the law, ignoring court orders and the like. And what we've seen in Los Angeles this weekend was, you know, I think the biggest eruption we've seen yet of the opposition to this. We've started to see it in smart different places around the country and around the United States, with people showing up or communities coming out to defend their community and oppose the actions of the ICE agents. Now we're seeing a lot of that in LA online on the weekend with large protests. I saw a video of people hurling rocks at parked police vehicles from a bridge, people lining it up against the police and the ICE to prevent them from going into places to grab people. And now online we're seeing people talking about doing similar protests like that organized in other places around the country, and it should be interesting to see how that transpires this week. You may remember when the first pro-Gaza or, you know, protests started happening, particularly in the encampments. They started in a few locations at different universities and then very quickly spread around both the United States and Canada and other jurisdictions. An encampment in solidarity with Palestine was set up out at UBC, for example, and was there for a few months. And many other universities in Canada. This is how these things start. I mean, something like what happened in LA this weekend, really, it energizes the opposition. People see that happening, and, you know, there's talk of the protests happening down in Seattle starting at 11 o'clock in just less than an hour. And I think probably there are other places all across the United States where that's going to be happening, and it should be interesting to see what happens this week. In response to the protests in L.A., President Trump called out the National Guard, which is kind of like a it's the military. It's like military reserves, essentially. And they often get called out to help with emergencies of different kinds. But usually that's done in coordination with state and local authorities. And in this case, the police or the National Guard was called out over the objections of the state and local authorities, who felt that it would only inflame the situation to see armed military soldiers out on the streets for what have been, for the most part, pretty peaceful protests. That there's been, you know, like I say, some rock throwing and some stuff, but it seems, from what I've read, most of the a lot of the violence and provocation seem to have initiated with the police authorities rather than protesters. And we'll see what's going to happen there. I think a lot is going to happen this week. We are heading into summer, which is kind of typically a season of protest. You may, again, jumping back to just previous examples, you know, the George Floyd protests started this time of year and started locally, you know, in Milwaukee in response to that incident, and then spread to other cities and then eventually around the world were happening throughout the summer. And who knows where we're at now, but that might be what we're seeing happening in response to this. And then, of course, we'll see how the administration responds to all this, because they've clearly indicated that they don't like the protests and are quite prepared to sort of characterize them in a way that allows them to do a strong or perhaps an overstrong reaction. That seems to be what they're doing already. So things could get, well, they're certainly going to get interesting. They could get a little scary. We'll see how that goes. We'll keep trying to follow that story here on Speak Up, along with our local stories as well. And we're going to shift into that right now. Here at CJSF, we've been here for almost 22, 23 years, broadcasting to not only Burnaby, but to the whole greater Vancouver area. And while we've always strived to provide coverage of the local scene, as a station with volunteer programs, it's often been difficult to do more news, a lot of sort of newsy kind of stories. I mean, we do a lot of interviews, we try and keep up on top of things, but it's been difficult. But through a program called the Local Journalism Initiative, we've been able to hire two reporters who are now focusing focusing on providing local news and public affairs coverage. And that larger program, the Local Journalism Initiative, was created to respond to the problems facing local journalism around the country. There are all across the country, local news outlets have been closing. Local TV and radio stations have been cutting back on the local news coverage they do. A lot of that in response to the fact that so much of the advertising support that is for up until pretty recently supported this these initiatives and these businesses has been sucked up by online sources, particularly Meta, which is Facebook and Instagram, and Google, which now account for something like 80% of the ad revenue, ad spends out there. You know, so almost all that money is going to those two mega corporations, and all the smaller, particularly local outlets have struggled to compete and stay afloat. Of course, the other part of it, not just the advertising part, is that, you know, until relatively recently, you know, when you had, you were a local news outlet, you had a certain territorial advantage. You were in the community. You could distribute your newspapers to the community. You could distribute your broadcast signal to the community. And national outlets had a much harder time doing that. They could certainly present to your community, but not necessarily present as much local coverage, and at the same time couldn't tap into local advertisers. A national advertiser couldn't tap into the local advertisers in the same way with sort of old school broadcasts. That's completely changed now, and you know, companies like Meta and Google can do that with their sort of targeted ads and algorithms and all the rest of that stuff, and that has really hurt local coverage. Just this spring, Glacier Media, which ran community newspapers in Burnaby, New Westminster, and the Tri-Cities shut down operations after, I think, 50 years plus of operation. A long time, you know, cutting a big hole in the local coverage, coverage focused on this area. We hear it. CJSF are trying to step into that gap, but 1.5 reporters isn't enough to fill that hole. And so there are people concerned, and a group got together, and this is a report from Danny about that, about trying to reinvigorate local news coverage.
Reporting from New Westminster, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. On April 17th of this year, three local news publications, the Burnaby Now, Tri-City News, and the New West Record, all closed their doors. The parent company of these outlets, Glacier Media, cited financial challenges as the reason for these closures. Since then, the region, which consists of six separate municipalities, has been left lacking in local news coverage. This is something that four previous journalists of the now-closed Glacier Media publications are looking to change. In collaboration with media workers union Unifor, on June 4th, 2025, a press conference was held at the Unifor Western Regional Office, where these four journalists, joined by the union, launched the Save Our Local News funding campaign. The current funding goal for the campaign is $100,000, which will be put towards creating a community-owned publication for residents of New Westminster, Burnaby, Port Coquitlam, Coquitlam, Balcarra, and Anmore.
This bold initiative aims to create a fresh, trusted, and reliable news publication in the growing communities of New Westminster, Burnaby, and the Tri-Cities. This grassroots project shows the tenacity and dedication of journalists who care about their communities and the work they produce. This is not just a fight against news deserts, this is a fight against for democracy. Thousands of residents and organizations in the Tri-Cities, Burnaby, and New Westminster communities have lost access to their long-standing local news publications with the recent closures of the New Westminster Record, the Burnaby Now, and the Tri-City News. This project is one that puts communities over profits, and the co-op is asking the community to support this campaign, to support by fundraising, and fundraising starts now at savelocalnews.ca.
Later in the conference, Cornelia Naylor, previously a journalist with the Burnaby Now, had this to say on the importance of the Save Our Local News campaign.
The four reporters here today, Mario, Teresa McManus, and Janice Clue, and I represent more than 100 years of covering New West, Burnaby, and the Tri-Cities. We live in these communities too. Personally, it's broken my heart over the last 2 months to see what happens when communities lose their reliable source of local news. I was the Burnaby Now education reporter for 11 years. Just last week, the Burnaby School Board passed a budget that included $3.3 million in cuts to local schools. With the Now shut down, however, there was no one at that four-hour meeting to report on what concerned citizens lined up to say, or to give context to the board's difficult decision. And that's just one example from one of these cities of the many important local stories that are no longer being told by reporters who really know them. Like Mario said, there has to be a better way.
After the conference, we spoke with Brian Gibson, president of Unifor Local 2000, who spoke about the positive reception that this campaign has already been receiving.
We've heard actually a lot of support, local businesses, local politicians even, and I know that our folks as journalists were concerned about, you know, being independent, and it's like, well, but these are donated to the co-op cause, not the newspaper itself, so they don't have like special favors if I give you something, like that kind of thing. But we are hearing a lot of support about that. Some public too. I mean, I know the mayor of Port Moody was saying a few things a while back about the concern about losing the Tri-Cities publication, right? So we're kind of tapping onto that, and I've heard lots of talk in that communities about the need for something. Like Mario said, miss that newspaper, because these papers went online in 2023, and then I think that's how it kind of fell apart, because I don't think, well, as I tell these companies, you're now competing against the New York Times and like all these places that are way, way bigger than you, and you're trying to vie for their attention, and you're just in all this noise. It's so much better to be, you know, community focused and just be the voice of your community, right? So
While the fundraising period of this campaign is still in its early stages, Gibson says that Unifor, as well as the journalists involved, will be out around in the community this summer promoting the Save Our Local News campaign. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. Grackles are notoriously loud and brazen birds. For all six species native to the Americas, males are iridescent black and females are sumptuous brown. You can hear the roaring calls of common grackles in the eastern U.S. and Canada. Great-tailed grackles make their own distinctive ruckus, gathering in the tens of thousands from parking lots in California to coastal Ecuador. But other grackles are pickier about their habitat, like the boat-tailed grackle, found in tidal zones along the Gulf and Atlantic coasts of the U.S. Or the Nicaraguan grackle, that sticks close to the shores of Lake Nicaragua and Lake Managua in Central America. In the Caribbean, the Greater Antillean grackle and Carib grackle abound. Sadly, there used to be a seventh. Before its extinction in the mid-1900s, the slender-billed grackle once thrived in marshes surrounding Mexico City. The last birder to hear one in the wild said their call was like that of a common grackle, a bird in steep decline today. Though some deem them pests, grackles can call us to celebrate the delightful diversity of common birds. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
Welcome to Dr. Misterio's Happy Hour, the second radio show with Spanish subtitles. We broadcast in Technicolor every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM. Tune in. Fill your Sunday soundtrack glass with happy rhythms, predominantly in Spanish, but with tons of female and Canadian content. And join us for table talk with local and international artists. Dr. Misterio's Happy Hour, every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Reporting from Burnaby, B.C., this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Researchers at Simon Fraser University and the University of British Columbia are working in collaboration with Civic Innovation Lab, TransLink, Evo Car Share, and Mobi Bike Share to identify potential transit futures in the city of Burnaby, primarily trying to identify how the future transportation landscape of the city can work towards reducing air pollution within the region. The research project is titled Community-Based Alternative Urban Transportation Decarbonization Pathways and Co-Benefits for Climate Resilience, Air Quality, Health, and Equity. As the name clearly suggests, this research project is covering a lot of ground, and currently it involves a series of community workshops throughout Burnaby where residents of the city are able to share their opinions on transportation in their neighborhoods. To learn more about the project's current findings, CJSF attended one of these workshops, where we were able to get in contact with Chris Busey, assistant professor of health sciences at SFU and co-principal investigator for the project. After the workshop, we sat down for a conversation with Busey, where we spoke on some of the project's key findings, potential outcomes, and how people living in Burnaby can still provide their input on transit policy within the region.
And I'm here today representing a team of researchers from multiple institutions, both Simon Fraser University, University of British Columbia, but also our colleagues at the Civic Innovation Lab, which is a partnership between SFU and the City of Burnaby, TransLink, Mobi, and Evo. And so we've all kind of come together with this goal of exploring how is it that we get people out of their cars and into their community, and how do we do that in ways that keep people moving? So this project is really about exploring different alternative scenarios, specifically for the City of Burnaby, with a very, very particular goal of reducing single vehicle kilometers traveled, or VKT. So how do we electrify our fleets to improve air quality? How do we also shift people's attitudes away from driving into micromobility, like riding and rolling, riding bikes or rolling scooters across town, versus taking public transit, right, as an affordable and available option.
And where is the research project at the moment? What are some of the key findings?
There's kind of four different work packages in this project. We've got a group out of UBC Okanagan that's working on something called an agent-based model. And so what they're trying to figure out is how do people currently move across the city of Burnaby? What's their typical mode? What does that look like in terms of time spent on the road, going from various locations that we all visit in our day-to-day realities? So work, school, recreation, shopping, you name it. That group is then kind of sharing that what we understand about how people move across the city of Burnaby with a second group of folks that's then asking the question, what's the implication for air quality, right? What are the choices that people make? How does that actually influence concentrations of things like particulate matter and ground level ozone and nitrous oxides, things that can be really harmful for human health? And then our third PA is actually thinking about that from that kind of health modeling perspective. So really saying, okay, well, based on those emissions, what can we reasonably anticipate? How is this going to translate into things like emergency department visits, respiratory health conditions, and so on and so forth? And where we're at in the project right now is we've kind of taken that first pulse of data collection, that first pulse of analysis, and we're now bringing it back to communities to help us make sense of those models, help us make sense of some of those kind of core findings, and really start to identify opportunities where we might be able to kind of influence or nudge people's behavior towards more sustainable modes of transportation. And the thing that I want to impress upon you, Danny, and your listeners is, you know, this is a huge issue for Canada. We know that transportation, it's the second largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, so it plays a really significant role in terms of climate change here domestically, but also internationally. We know that those emissions have grown about 33% from 1990, right? We're actually not moving in the right way. We're seeing more and more electrification, but those emissions aren't actually decreasing yet. And we also know that because of the primacy of gas-powered and diesel-powered automobiles on our streets, adverse air quality events are a significant and leading cause of mortality. We anticipate, or Health Canada's modeled out, that we see about 14,600 premature deaths every single year attributable to adverse air quality in Canada. So this is a really significant issue, not only from kind of a sustainability perspective, but also from a human health and well-being perspective.
Mm-hmm. And you said that one of the organizations involved with this research project is Evo Carshare. Are car sharing cars also a part of that KVT number that you had mentioned previously?
Yeah, so we've kind of released a survey to Burnabites. We had a mail-out survey that reached about 30,000 people across the city. And we asked them about their typical trip. So it's almost like compiling a trip diary. How did you get around, and what's your most selected mode of transportation? And so there we invited people to provide a whole host of information about how they get around, ranging from, again, single automobile trips to public transit, to cycling, to walking, to rolling, to car share, to ride hailing with things like Uber and Lyft. And other, we also invited people to kind of self-define how they get around if they didn't take any of those modes, and we wanted to learn about those. So car sharing is definitely one of these opportunities where we're starting to see, you know, EVO as an organization spread out into more and more parts of Burnaby. It doesn't have complete coverage of the city yet, but we are seeing that it's being introduced as a really unique opportunity to enhance and or at least reduce vehicle kilometers traveled, particularly in high density locations like apartment buildings, right, where you've got this opportunity to maybe restrict parking a little